28. Paperback. Chris took his own car in case he had to get Monica. It was a relatively small place, three women dancing at a time on a runway in the middle of a circular bar. Whatever song was playing, even something light out of the 70s, it had a heavy rhythm section engineered into it. There were strobe lights that kept changing the setting to different colors, and mostly the women looked slightly purple up there. Floyd was right. The majority of the dancers were attractive, and the bodies were tight and supple. "One thing I'll give this place," Chris said. "No poles. This you can get into easier." "I must say they're good dancers," Allison said. "More professional than I expected." Floyd said, "With this place, a lot of the girls are supposedly from Brazil. Doesn't seem logical, but I heard that." "Actually, I can see it," Allison said. "Wait a second," Chris said. "What can you see? Who's Brazilian up there now?" "The middle girl, for one," she said. "I mean, look how exquisitely she moves." Chris said, "Take away the lighting. She's white as a sheet. My guess is she hails from Rapid City, South Dakota." His phone rang. Monica. He excused himself. "Yep," he said. "Chris, please. Can you at least say something?" "What time is it?" "It's 10 to 1. "Okay, just be in the lobby." He told Floyd and Allison to continue having fun and took his time, stopping for a donut and coffee on the way. Monica was reading a paperback when he got there. "Well," he said, "I think I have some stuff for you, but can it wait until tomorrow, Chris?" "It can, absolutely. In fact, never is fine, too." "You know what? It wasn't quite what you thought." They got home to a dark house. Floyd and Allison were still out, and Chris went straight to bed and barely moved until noon. He went in the kitchen, where someone had been frying bacon. "One of you looks relatively fresh," he said, "while the two late arrivals look like shit." Monica said, "You didn't tell me they were watching strippers. We could have met them." "You didn't ask," Chris said. Allison said, "It was pretty amazing. When I feel better, I'm going to try to write a song about the experience." Floyd said, "The pace that you're all setting, it's a little heavy for me." "Is there a Starbucks nearby?" Monica said. "I have to go over a few things with Chris." Floyd gave them directions and headed back to bed. Chris said, "Might as well walk it then. Give you time to gather your thoughts." The Starbucks was a mile or so down Seneca Avenue, everything pretty quiet on a Sunday afternoon. Halfway there, Monica took his arm. "Now that," Chris said, "is an error. It makes me feel good. You can't lighten up and leave it at that?" "Fuck, I forgot all about Ray," he said. Ray answered on the second ring. He said, "I get over there, nothing jumping out, ringing no alarm. So Brigida and I went out to dinner." "Okay, fine, but what about the husband?" "No sign of him. According to her, he on a business trip." "But she seemed the same as when we went to Booker's?" "Far as I could go with it, she did. In fact, that's where we went back to. They was featuring the music again. I couldn't get out there this time, though." "She curious at all why you happened to stop by her house?" "Somewhat. I told her your mind probably running away with you being out in the sticks somewhere. I also mentioned, should the motherfucker put his hands on her, I'll kill him." "Ray, now something like that, that would be me. You have to take my word for it. Anyhow, I owe you. Pleasure's mine. When you be back?" "Hopefully soon. This trip has gone 180 degrees different than I expected." When he put the phone away, Monica said, "Are you a secret agent or something? I'm not kidding. You have a secondary life." He looked at her and said, "Okay, 100% confidential. What it really is, I'm one of those people you read about who the medical experts give a year to live. I'm trying to cram in what I can in the time I have left. Monica stopped walking and let go of his arm, her mouth half open, looking up at him. "Jiminy Christmas," he said. "I'm joking." She hit him hard on the shoulder. "Don't play around like that. I'm serious. You almost gave me a heart attack." "That's my fault then, but you better start smiling again. Get rid of that crinkled up face." "Why should I? You piss me off." Chris got behind her and started tickling her under the armpits. She tried to wriggle out of it, but he stayed on her, and pretty soon she was laughing, yelling at him to stop. "There you go. Back to your cheerful self," he said. "For a few minutes, till you start cross-examining me about Kyle," she said. He waited until they had their tall, skinny, white chocolate mochas, or whatever it was she'd ordered. "Just start me off with the bottom line," he said. "Well, he does have a wife in California. They're still technically married." "Did he strike you as someone who could get violent?" "I don't know. I wouldn't have thought so. But then he got really angry when he couldn't get it up." "He couldn't?" "No, he tried for an hour and left. He didn't even say goodbye." "Wait a second, you got there at 9. What took you so long then?" "They had one of those fancy bathtubs with the jacuzzi jets. I wanted to try it. Then I turned on the TV and fell asleep." "Oh, Jesus. What else did he say about the California wife?" "Only that they see each other every so often. They spend most of the time making love, supposedly." "Anything else?" "He said he wants a divorce so he can marry his girlfriend, but your friend isn't being cooperative. That he tells her she needs to get on with her life." "You tell him your name was Monica?" "Of course. I'm not a sneaky person." Chris took a moment. "I guess that covers it then," he said. "What else is going on with you?" "Chris, please do me a favor. Can we drop the whole thing now?" "We can," he said. "It's nice to finally have some closure." The simplest thing would be to kill Kyle because he was a piece of scum that no one would miss. What the real dope was between Bethany and the guy was irrelevant. The problem was Monica would get caught up in it sooner or later, which of course meant him. Allison was sleeping when they got home, and Floyd was in the kitchen reading a Sports Illustrated. Chris said, "Thought I'd take a little personal time this afternoon." Floyd didn't look up, and Monica said that sounds good and plopped down in the living room. As Chris started to drive away, he noticed some red rocks in Floyd's front yard, framing a scraggly piece of cactus. He found one that felt good, headed back up the interstate to Anthem. He passed the house and parked around the corner again and walked back and rang the prick's bell. Kyle answered, chewing, a beer in his hand. "Whoops," Chris said. "I might have the wrong address. I'm looking for Monica." Kyle flinched. Chris could see a pretty strawberry blonde woman, pregnant, down the hall at the kitchen sink. "I guess not then," he said. "Sorry to bother you." There was nothing to do but walk around the neighborhood and pass by the house every 20 minutes, hoping Kyle's girlfriend went somewhere. On the fourth pass, one car was gone and Kyle's was still there. Chris looked around, was satisfied there were no neighbors in the way, and rang the bell. This time when the door opened, Chris hit Kyle in the mouth with a rock. Kyle went to his knees and held his face, and there was blood all over, and Chris was pretty sure he'd eliminated several of the guy's teeth. There was kids' laughter coming from an upstairs room. Not a huge concern. Kyle was lying on the floor now sobbing like a child. Chris said, "What you take from this, Kyle? You bothering Monica again, that would be an error." Kyle nodded just barely. "Oh, and on a related topic," Chris said, "Bethany. The thing there is, She needs her privacy. I find out you're ever in her presence. Rest of your life, I'll have to kill you. Then I'll fuck your girlfriend. The right way. Kyle covered his head with his arms, looking like he expected to get hit again. Chris said, "We good then, Kyle?" Kyle moved slightly, indicating they were. Chris walked back to the car, moving fast but not rushing it to where he was conspicuous. The asshole could call the police, of course, which would be a mess, but looking at the big picture, it didn't seem likely. 29. Quick salute. Allison and Monica tried to talk Floyd into coming to California with them. Floyd said the idea had potential, but he couldn't right now. They were out front, the car parked and packed, a perfect blue sky morning. Chris said to Floyd, "Next time I come visit, I'll give you more notice. I feel like we kind of turned you upside down there." Floyd said, "Yeah, you did, but it was good for me." Chris gave him a quick salute and got in the car. No hug or handshake or big thank you. He didn't feel like going there, even though he might not see his brother again. They stopped for coffee at a rest area on I-10 an hour into the trip, and then pretty much drove straight through. As they approached the Ashby Avenue exit for Berkeley, Chris said to Allison, "You haven't said squat since about needles." "She thinks she's lovesick," Monica said. "Give her until Wednesday." Chris said, "You notice how my brother was less animated as the weekend wore on?" "Al does that to people," Monica said. Allison said, "It happened so fast, I'm not sure I'll meet anyone as interesting or fun." "You mean cute," Monica said. "You think what you want," she said, "but Chris, thank you for taking us. I mean it." "Well, I guess it wasn't the worst way to spend 10 days, he said. "There won't be a part two, though." "Hey, it's not even 9 yet," Monica said. "Why don't we go into the city and do something?" "Yeah, right," Chris said. When he got to his apartment, there was a piece of binder paper under the door which said, "I look for fucker Chris Seeley." He turned it over, and there was no other information. He put it on the table and walked over to Weatherby's. "Yo, my long-lost brethren," Chef said. "You've been on my mind." "I have?" "Oh, yeah," lowering his voice. "They must be liberating your adventures while the rest of us are in our rut." "Haven't been putting them in that light, honestly. You see certain things that need to happen is the extent of it." Shep looked around, but nothing, when you strip it down to its core. "You say, damn, that felt good?" Chris said, "I guess you could apply that to the first one. The second one, the beneficiary has mixed feelings, it turns out. The third was a waste of time." "Wow. So 3. "Yeah, but really just 2. The third had the wrong guy." "You're shitting me. Wrong guy as in a mistake or in the way?" "Both. A mistake on my part and then becoming in the way. A guy driving." "Jesus. Thing was, the correct guy, his routine didn't give me much. I have to go back, which I'm not looking forward to." "Does he ever go anywhere better?" Shep said. "I don't know. But you mean find out if he's taking a trip or something and meet him there? I hadn't thought of that." Shep cleared his throat. "Anyhow, besides that business, what's next?" "Well, one unfortunate development is I think I got someone looking for me." "Oh boy, regarding your list?" "Sort of. It's probably harmless, but even so, I need this type of thing right now like a hole in the head." Tuesday morning, Chris took his normal run from the Marina Safeway to Fort Point. He did the same thing on Wednesday, and this time he was pretty sure there was a guy following him. He'd been feeling the guy's presence, a steady 10 yards behind him, starting at the Marina Green, So at Chrissy Field, he stopped to tie his shoe and the guy stopped to tie his. When he started running again, the guy didn't follow. But when he got back to the yacht harbor on the return trip, the guy was there waiting for him on a bench. The guy followed 10 yards behind him to Safeway and continued on when Chris stopped near his car. Little dude looked real fit, shaved head, wearing a shiny tracksuit. Chris went home, took a shower, and called Brigida. "I had dinner with Ray when you were out of town," she said. "Word had it that you were concerned about me." "I was," Chris said, "and I still am. Steve around?" "He's in Philadelphia." "I see. So tonight okay then? For dinner?" "My, you certainly dispense with the formalities. I'll see you at 7 unless you tell me otherwise." "No, that should be fine. I do feel a modicum of guilt, I must tell you, though." "Don't," he said. After lunch, he got on the library computer. First, he looked for a Pocatello newspaper. The thing happened last Thursday, so it wasn't even a week, but it felt like a long time ago. It had been the headline story for Saturday. Blackfoot man found dead off Highway 33, apparent victim of foul play. March 27, 2017. The body of a Blackfoot man apparently shot to death was discovered Friday afternoon at an Idaho Power substation on Highway 33 east of Pocatello. The victim was identified as Lincoln Sweetig, 28, of 318 Dramouth Street in Blackfoot. The discovery was made by a J.B. Hunt trucker who had pulled off the road to rest. Sheriff's Department spokesperson Molly Surlock said the victim appeared to have been shot by a handgun at close range. No further details were available. Sweetig was a 2007 graduate of Blackfoot High School and was employed as a welder by Holquin Brothers Metals in Pocatello. It is the second apparent homicide in Bannock County in 2017. In February, Clint Elong of Pocatello was charged with shooting and killing his brother Mike at a Super Bowl party in Chubbuck. Chris searched the Arizona papers and couldn't find anything on a guy in Anthem getting assaulted in his foyer, so hopefully that was that. The LA Times had one follow-up story on Chip from 9 days after the incident. Slain Hermosa financial planner reportedly bilked investors by Jack Spurley. March 20th, 2017. Hermosa Beach financial planner Chip Reggio, who was found murdered in his office on March 11th, had disgruntled clients in both Southern California and Las Vegas, according to a source close to the investigation. The source told the LA Times that Reggio was thought to have used illegal and unethical tactics against investors for more than a decade, netting close to $500,000 as a result. The tactics included setting up Ponzi schemes involving shell corporations and creating fictitious foreclosure property packages. Reggio, 46, had reportedly been under investigation by federal authorities since 2010. An LAPD spokesman declined comment, saying only that a homicide investigation is ongoing. Reggio was discovered beaten to death on March 11th in his office at 213 Norton Lane. He was a resident of Manhattan Beach, having moved there from Las Vegas in 2006, records show. A good story for sure, and a terrific job of investigative reporting by Jack Spurley. Finally, he Googled back through the Donnie case. There were no follow-ups in the Chronicle, but there was one in the Marin County Independent Eagle from last weekend when he was in Arizona. Proposal to name Terra Linda PVHS dugout after Donnie Shellhorn draws mixed reaction by Evelyn Buffum. March 27, 2017. a proposal made Wednesday by Pratt Valley High School officials to name the home dugout at Harrigan Field after the late Donnie Shellhorn has drawn mixed reaction in the Marin County community. Shellhorn, 23, was killed the evening of March 1st while jogging on the RCJC campus in Santa Rosa, according to authorities. The case remains unsolved. Shellhorn attended PVHS from 2008 to 2012 and was a standout pitcher on the baseball team, earning all Marin honors twice and winning the Marin County Field and Turf MVP award his senior year. He received a full-ride baseball scholarship to Ripperton University and graduated last spring. At the time of his death, he was part of a culinary startup in Santa Rosa. In 2012, Shellhorn was arrested but never charged in connection with the alcohol-related death at a party of 16-year-old PVHS student Megan Britta. PVHS Boosters President Randy Turk called the proposal entirely appropriate. Donnie was one of the faces of athletics in Marin County during his tenure, Turk said. Hopefully having his name live on in this manner will provide a small measure of comfort to his friends and family. Faculty member Joyce McCann, an English teacher who has been at the school for 14 years, took a different view. Donald Shellhorn should receive no honor whatsoever at Pratt Valley High School, McCann said. His actions 5 years ago took the life of an innocent child, she said. I can tell you in all honesty that not everyone is upset about how it played out. Jesus fucking Christ. A decision on the proposal is expected to be announced at the year-end school board meeting in June. Chris left the library and called Joyce. I'm afraid to ask what I owe this honor to, she said. I haven't even texted you for a couple days. We should catch up, he said. Fine, I'll be down. Give me a half hour to finish grading these papers. I'll make it easier on you, he said, thinking the vicinity of his apartment wasn't the best idea. I'll meet you in Mill Valley, the plaza. Fair enough, she said. She got there around 3:30, a few minutes after he did. There was an old-time market that made good sandwiches, one of the last real places still standing, most of Mill Valley being upscale shops now. They took the sandwiches back to the plaza. Chris said, "The simple question, I didn't really read that in the newspaper, did I? Please tell me I was dreaming it." Joyce said, "The direct answer? It needed to be said." Well, what comes to mind, without me being a genius, is why the fuck would you want to attract more attention to yourself and others in your circle of acquaintances when you're already on the radar? Chris, I didn't kill anyone, nor do I know for sure who did. I spoke my piece, which is the least I can do for Megan. Frankly, I'm surprised you'd have a problem with that. You were so scared, though, when you thought they suspected you had something to do with it. Well, I got past that. What can I say? They're trying to honor Donnie makes me nuts. Chris finished eating. They were sitting on a bench near the cement chess tables where a few disheveled guys were playing speed chess using clocks. You know what? He said, I apologize. That's a crock. You never apologize, Chris. I respect what you did, I do. It's just a million things kind of crowding in on me at once. I was wrong to butt into your business. What million things? Tell me, Chris, let me help you. She put her hand on his. Little stuff is all combining together. No one big thing. I'll be fine. But what can I do? You know there's something. Well, I guess a walk would be therapeutic. I'm still trying to clear the cobwebs from being on the road. You can fill me in on who you hooked up with since you dumped Bruce. Fine, but your little excursion. Did your doctor's cute secretary with the nose ring accompany you? She did, and she even brought a friend. And nothing happened, if that's what you're asking. Actually, I take it back. There were occurrences, just nothing involving me. Chris, you know that's not good enough. Involving who? My brother, for one. Really? Floyd, I'll be darned. How's he doing? Fine, I think, though he didn't look too good when we left. He made it pretty extensively with the secretary, and I'm guessing worked his way into the friend as well. My God, and you witnessed this? Caught an inadvertent glimpse of it. I had to distance myself. I was starting to feel inadequate. And did one of them watch when Floyd would satisfy the other? Okay, that's enough now. The thing that kind of got me, they're both raving about how irresistible my brother is, saying like he's part of their generation. I'm thinking he's only 7 years younger than me. Well, they are correct about Floyd being awfully handsome. He said something similar about you, if I remember right. He did? What did he say? He put you in the same hot number category as the secretary and the friend. Except with you, it's more subtle, was his view. How sweet of him. If he were here, I'd give him a big kiss for that. That all? Chris, I'm probably crazy, but I've always found you more attractive than your brother. Okay, whatever. The new guy, what's his name? Doug. Yeah, how's that all going? I'm not sure. He's a really nice guy, but he lives with his mother. What's wrong with that? Everything. Hey, I want to look at the falls. They were at the top of Throckmorton, and there was the little green sign for Cascade Park. I guess we could, Chris said. They took the trail that looped around the main waterfall, which ran fast this time of year. It was peaceful in there, surrounded by giant redwoods, soft-packed needles under your feet, no sign of other humans. Remember when we used to do it outside, Joyce said. She was hanging on to him. No. Don't give me that. Yes, you do. Okay, I remember that one time in the backyard. There was no used to, though, as in regular event. There were four times, not counting the in-the-car ones, she said. Oh, Christ. The first time was in your backyard, correct, when you had that bungalow off Todd Road. Fine. The second was on the Russian River. Remember we rented the canoe when we found that little cove below Johnson's Beach? It was a weekday. There wasn't anyone around. The third was something else. The 4th of July fireworks show in Corte Madera Park. Everyone captivated and crowded together. And you made love to me behind the tennis courts. We could see flashes of color. Chris didn't say anything. Then there was a time on Union Street, in that narrow alley alongside the restaurant. I couldn't believe it when you suggested it, that you would throw caution to the wind like that. Oh, how'd that work, the one in the city, he said. For me, amazingly. No, I mean, did you have to take stuff off, or what? I was wearing a dress, don't you remember? It was Stacy Filing's graduation from law school. We ended up on Union afterwards with a group of people. Chris stopped walking. The problem I'm having at the moment, he said, is I don't want it to happen again. We better get out of here. But you do, Joyce said, reaching for him. What, you can't take my word for it, he said. She said, remember when you used to pick me up, suspend me? Not at all. I'll reteach you then, she said. It was after 6 when Chris got back to the city. It had been an error, for the most part, to add on something in front of seeing Brigida. He had a dull headache and needed a nap. He wasn't sure if that was normal wear and tear or if his condition was slowly but surely starting to kick in. He decided to take the scenic route to Brigida's, cutting through the Presidio from Old Letterman Hospital to the Arguello Gate, and he noticed a car following him close. His guess was the tracksuit guy from the morning, who hopefully was the same person that stuck the note under his door, looking for fucker Chris Seeley. When he got to Brigida's, He watched the car drive by and then park on the next block. He rang the bell, suddenly aware of how hungry he was, thinking about the Burmese place on Clement Street that he liked. Brigida opened the door and Chris glanced down the street before he went inside, and it was definitely the tracksuit guy, still dressed the same, standing against the car now with his arms folded, looking right at him. Something smelled good in the oven, and Brigida sat him down and said, "I must express my gratitude, Chris, how you've looked after me, even from faraway places, apparently." Chris said, "Or maybe I just faked being concerned, because Ray wanted a date with you." Brigida laughed. "Then it was for the best, because we had a nice evening. You don't think Ray was in any way serious, though, when he spoke of doing violence against Steve?" "No, no, of course not. Unless maybe you wanted something like that to happen." Locked on her eyes. She took a moment. "I wouldn't be truthful if I said I haven't embraced those thoughts recently as fantasy. But I could never condone an act of violence. Does Steve have a gun, far as you know?" "My land, I hope not. He did serve a stint in the Israeli army before I knew him. He certainly never hunted or any such thing. He have any friends, acquaintances of questionable character you've ever met?" "Well, Steve does own a number of houses in Richmond, in a downtrodden neighborhood. His property manager, Willie, although he's been exceedingly polite, strikes me as someone who may have been incarcerated." "Black guy?" "Yes." Brigida excused herself and came back with a tray of appetizers, homemade bite-sized pastries with a meat filling. "Dang, these hit the spot," Chris said. "Anybody foreign you can think of in Steve's circle?" "You're starting to sound like a detective," she said. "I'm sorry, I'm just fishing. I don't know where I'm going with this. To the contrary, I sense your concern has to do with my welfare. It's unfounded, but flattering. Steve takes tennis lessons occasionally from a man I don't think I would trust. I believe his first name is Demirko. You might know him? Is he Russian? Eastern European, I think Croatian. What's Demirko look like?" "He's short and prematurely bald. He appears athletic, like someone who may have been a gymnast. I met him only once with Steve at the Golden Gate Park courts. We said hello, but my sense was this was a cold individual." "Any chance Steve and Demirko do business together?" "I've not heard of Demirko in that regard, but what I know doesn't mean a great deal, does it?" They had to wait a few minutes at the Burmese restaurant, even on a Wednesday night. But it was worth it, the food pretty tasty and the portions large. Finishing their tea, Chris said, "Is Steve still fooling around on you?" "He says he's not," Brigida said. "It reminds me of the baseball players," Chris said. "They catch a bunch of them using steroids, and Congress investigates, and then everyone calls it the steroid era, as though it's all over. You know most of the players are still using something, even the ones that got caught." You're saying Steve coming clean and treating me more lovingly doesn't mean he's altered his behavior?" "Highly doubtful." "Well, my intellect agrees with you, but my heart doesn't want to." "That's understandable. You want to take a browse in the Green Apple and then come back to my apartment for a while?" "My, you shift gears unexpectedly, but yes, that sounds lovely." The Green Apple was across the street, a large, well-organized, used bookstore that had been there since the 60s. Chris said, "There's always a lot of people in this place, you know it? With everything you hear about the e-readers and other dumb devices taking over?" "Thankfully," Brigida said, "Chris bought a book on past life regressions written by a psychiatrist he heard interviewed on the radio once. There were chapters devoted to different patients who under hypnosis started speaking foreign languages or described Roman sandals on their feet or castles they lived in, that sort of thing. when they were driving home at the stoplight on Arguello, he saw that Demirko, turning out to be quite a pesky little fucker, was behind them. "What'd you get?" Chris said. "Oh, just R's for Ricochet from the Sue Grafton series. I've read most of them." "That's the woman private eye with the letters of the alphabet, right?" said in fake Santa Barbara, keeping his eye on the rearview mirror. "It is," she said. "I do give her credit. She's been at it for 30 years. She's through V now." "I started the first one," Chris said. "Couldn't buy into it. But I'm not much of a mystery fan." Brigitte smiled. "But you are apparently a fan of past lives." "Something I'm looking into," he said. Demirko veered off when they crossed Lombard Street and they went up to his apartment. Chris made coffee. "This is quite the bachelor pad," Brigitte said. "Forgive me if I am prying, but you must have entertained many ladies here." "I've tried. Not sure how consistently entertaining I've been." "If you had to come up with a past life, though, for yourself, what would it be?" "Ooh, that's difficult, though I am open to the possibility. Something with horses and a schoolhouse in England, perhaps? That vision has flashed through my mind on occasion since I was a child, like a deja vu sensation. What about you?" "I got nothing. I never believed in those type things. They fly in the face of logic. But this doctor on the radio was compelling. Plus my dad said some weird stuff at the end." "What did he say?" "That he was a soldier at Fort Sumter in Georgia. Something bad happened to him. I couldn't understand quite what. But his description of detail was uncanny, and he seemed so sure of himself and pained by some of the recollections." "Well, that certainly is intriguing," Brigitte said. "That was with the morphine kicking in, of course. I was at a Club Med about 10 years ago, and this comedy magician put on an adult show one night." "He did. He asked for female volunteers from the audience to come up on stage, and he sat them in a line of chairs. Maybe 6 women volunteered. The guy then supposedly hypnotized the whole group, and their heads all slumped forward." "Yes? And then what?" "Then he gives them instructions that when he touches their shoulder or hand, they will become highly stimulated. He tells them to sit up and look straight ahead, and then goes around one by one, poking them with a fingertip on the shoulder. And they became sexually aroused at that point," Brigitte said. "Yeah, right away, except for one woman who didn't react, but forget her. The others' responses became more heightened each time the magician would tap them on the shoulder again. It didn't matter if it was their bare skin through the clothes, worked exactly the same." "Please continue." "So he keeps this up for a while, essentially teasing them, and then for the grand finale, he shakes hands with each of them. Sustained contact now, where he's bringing the person's hand up in the air and circling it back down, sort of like he's turning a crank. The women all climaxed, at least it sure seemed like they did. A couple of them ended up out of the chair and on the floor." I've never heard such a story before. One of the women I knew a little bit from a windsurfing lesson we took. I asked her the next day at lunch if she remembered being on stage, and she said no, that she remembered volunteering, but nothing after that." "I see. Anyhow, I didn't mean to get so far off track. The point I'm trying to make, we know so little about how the brain works. We probably understand less than 1% of it." Brigitte nodded. "What?" Chris said. "You're still picturing the Club Med thing?" "Very much so," she said quietly, coming close. "Uh-oh," Chris said. "To be honest, this direction wasn't foremost on my mind tonight. Nothing with you, just my energy level is not quite up to par." "Shall you take a bit more coffee then?" Brigitte said, rubbing the back of his neck. slurring her words slightly. "I can probably tough it out," Chris said. 30. Bad strokes. He dropped Brigida off late morning and drove over to the Golden Gate Park tennis courts. The courts were full of hackers like himself, mostly playing doubles, many with terrible-looking wraps on their knees or forearms. They tended to talk after every point, all four of them chiming in on what a great rally it had just been, sometimes yelling out. It made Chris realize you didn't get much exercise in tennis unless you were pretty good, that you just looked stupid out there, and he vowed to forget the whole thing from here on out. There was an elevated clubhouse with a couple of couches and a ping-pong table, and next to the locker rooms was a small pro shop with an attractive Asian woman in tennis attire behind the counter. "How do the lessons work, please?" Chris said. "Certainly," the woman said. "I'm Jenna," extending her hand. "We also have Mark. It's best to book a day or two in advance. We charge $65 an hour, or $40 a half hour." "Anyone else teach here besides you and Mark?" "Officially, no." "There are unofficial pros then?" "Oh yes, unfortunately," she said. "They do it on the sly and they undercut us. I keep telling Park and Rec, you have signs all over the place prohibiting that. You have to enforce the rules. But they don't." "You mean the pirate instructor signs up for a court with a partner, and the partner is the one taking the lesson?" "You got it. That would make me go ballistic. It's your livelihood." "Thank you." "They good players, any of them?" "It's a mixed bag. The advantage with Mark or myself is we've paid our dues. I played D1 in futures and then got USPTA certified. You know what you're getting. But a guy in his 50s with bad strokes and a bad attitude, will he get more out of his lesson with you than with some doofus?" "Probably not," she said. There was a bulletin board on a side wall with players seeking partners, musical happenings on Hate Street, upcoming tournament notices, and so on. There were business cards here and there. Chris went through them one by one until he saw the word Demirko and took that one off the wall. The card read, "Fitness training from national trainer. Mixed martial arts, also tennis, called Demirko." There was a rare payphone outside the clubhouse, and Chris found some change and dialed the number. After half a dozen rings, he got, "Yes, Demirko trainer." Chris said, "Hey, I'm on the court, Golden Gate. What happened?" He could hear Demirko fumbling around. "My sorry," he said, "I teach San Jose today." "Fine, I'll come down there then. Where are you?" "Okay, you know the Stevenson Park? We can do 6 tonight." "That late?" "I'm sorry, I have juniors from 2. "All right, 6 then. Your name is again?" "Nem," was the pronunciation. "Barry Bonds," Chris said, and hung up and started driving to San Jose. The gun was still in the spare tire compartment in the trunk as far as he knew, though he hadn't actually verified that fact since the issue in Pocatello. He stopped at a 7-Eleven in Cupertino to get directions to Demirko's park and backed into a space that faced a brick wall. He casually opened the trunk and confirmed he was good. While he was at it, he put on the latex gloves and carefully reloaded the thing back to 6 shots. Highly unlikely, but not out of the question. He got to Stevenson Park around 3, and all 8 courts were full, with 2 of them occupied by Demirko and his juniors. He had to hand it to the guy. It was an impressive operation. Maybe 15 kids out there, everyone busy, first hitting a series of balls fed by Demirko or his assistant, a young guy also wearing a shiny tracksuit, then running to a side area, putting down the racket and doing an exercise, then hustling to pick up a bunch of balls, then back to the hitting drill again. DeMirco barked orders like a drill sergeant, but no one seemed to mind. The kids all looked elite, like tournament players who were focused and took direction well. After a while, they shifted to a different drill involving baseline cross-court rallying, and it was clear DeMirco was the weakest player out there. His strokes were short and choppy, while the kids all crushed the ball with a loose-armed wrap-around open stance technique you saw the pros using on TV. The guy had probably never been on a tennis court until he came to America and saw you could make money teaching it, and he figured out enough to make it work. You add in some personal training and the occasional side job, like getting hired to follow a guy and break his arm or neck, and you probably did okay for yourself. Chris hung around for an hour, watching from a distance, and got out of there. He'd seen enough tennis drills for a lifetime, and it seemed unwise to confront DeMirco. He thought about following the guy back to where he lived, getting a sense of that, but it didn't seem worth it, because then what? Bottom line, he'd be running into the prick again soon. When he got back into the city, he took a chance and stopped by Ray's. Ray came down to the lobby, happy to see him. "Seely, you know there's something wrong with you, though," Ray said. "What do you mean?" "You ain't normal. You always got something urgent you dealing with. Can't wait to hear what it is now, the reason you came. You want to get something to eat, then?" "Man, I was getting ready to fix me something when you rang. But if you insist..." "Where to?" "You know you want to go to that first joint, the one I wouldn't walk into voluntarily in my lifetime. That'd be fine." Weatherby's was half full when they arrived, and they got a table in back, and the drinks came quickly. Chris said, "First of all, what you did, making sure Brigida was okay." "We've been over this already. She's still okay?" "As far as I know, I saw her last night." "When you saying, saw her last night, that mean you did her up?" "It went that way, yeah. Man, I wish I was in your shoes." "Ray, don't worry about me. You can date Brigida all you want." "Believe me, Seely, I ain't worried about you. The problem is I got no libido." "What?" "The treatment. It's fucked me up in the head. Don't got shit anymore in that department." "You mean no interest or can't do anything about it?" "Fuck you, motherfucker. Both." "Wow. What do the doctors say?" "That the condition mess with some people, others it don't. They not sure why." "Ray, I'm real sorry to hear that. That's no way to live." "I don't especially need a piece of shit white boy to tell me that. All the action you getting. Playing the ladies, maybe even shooting people." "Have you tried like a hypnotist or something?" Chris said. "No, and not planning to. Much a bull roar there." "Well, on my end, not as big a deal after I hear your thing. But I got a guy seems to know my business. Insists on following me around. Okay, here we go. Now we establishing why we here. Pretty sure it's connected to the Brigida husband, Steve. That dude honestly don't strike me as someone you'd have to worry about, other than he'd be yelling and screaming. I thought that too, but this guy he's got working for him, or whatever, he might be a tough customer. Foreign guy with an MMA background." "So you afraid he gonna slap a submission hold on you, make you tap out?" Ray was laughing. "Actually, kill me would be at the top of the list of what I'm afraid of." "Nah, nobody gonna take a chance on you. You ain't worth it." "Hopefully. But what if the husband was insane enough to think so?" "Then you on defense," Ray said. "Meaning what?" Chris said. "Well, you know your friend, right? Running the other joint around the corner." Ray was talking softer. "Yeah, Booker. Me and him, we had a little history years back. A lot of shit was going down in Bayview and Booker near the middle of it. Whenever he found he on defense, he handled it right away. Jesus Christ. He got pinched once, but it never stuck. Now he's striding around table to table with manicured fingernails, jazz music flowing, asking how is everything. The ones put him on defense, things worked out different. This was what I was afraid you would say. Not about Booker, but my deal. Of course you could do what a sensible citizen of the United States of America usually do, Ray said. Call the police. I thought of that, but if I had to go back on defense, then they're familiar with me now. Didn't know you was a natural genius. How about that? But back to handling this. There anything you recommend? Well, Brigida's old man getting smacked upside the head, that might put an end to the show. Might be rolling the dice there, though, Chris said. Could backfire the other way. All right, let me clarify something. You got the piece, you act in the part, but you full of shit. Okay, mostly, yeah. I guess I am. At least you honest about it. I can't blame you. You got the good life going on. Chris said, so you'd say keep an eye on things for now and hope they resolve themselves. I don't believe you heard me say that, Ray said. 31. Bitten off. Friday morning he tried a little curveball, starting his run right from his apartment, not driving anywhere. But when he got halfway across the Marina Green, yep, there was DeMirco on him again, pacing himself 10 yards back. The guy was actually talking on his phone a few minutes later when Chris looked over his shoulder. Quite the multitasker. Ray was right, of course. Chris was hoping for an alternative he hadn't thought of, but ultimately there was just the one way. The problem being, you'd probably get caught. You shoot a guy in San Francisco, especially a foreign guy with some mystery behind him, the case would be all over the news and the police would work it hard. Getting caught at the end when you can barely get out of bed was one thing, but getting caught when you still felt pretty darn good and had plenty left to accomplish was dumb. You could baseball bat the guy and maybe improve your odds. You wouldn't be leaving any random firearms evidence, and it could look like a case of road rage or something, but close combat with this guy seemed foolish because he might fend you off and then put an extended rear naked choke on you, and it's all over. This time the dick followed him all the way to the bridge and back until Chris crossed Marina Boulevard to get back into his neighborhood. In the shower, he thought, could something fall on the guy? Or could he hit him with the car saying it was an accident? Could he start an argument with the guy and then shoot him in self-defense? No, of course, that was all idiotic and he was procrastinating. He went to the library and looked up drowning. What he wanted to know was, did someone who got drowned by another person exhibit anything different to a coroner than someone who drowns accidentally on his own? After a half hour, the answer wasn't clear. The literature was too complicated and disorganized, like much that you tried to look up on the internet. Why couldn't they just tell you what people want to know? While reading about drowning, though, Chris had an idea. What about somehow drowning the guy under the bridge and have it appear the guy jumped off? After all, the Golden Gate Bridge was one of the most used suicide structures in the world. He realized that idea was ridiculous. Surveillance cameras on the bridge, too many people around, and if the asshole really jumped off the bridge, his bones and organs would be shattered on impact, was his understanding. Chris remembered he hadn't checked his fake Gmail account since he set it up before Pocatello. He had emailed some Santa Rosa high schools as a long shot looking for Jerry Smith, the drunk driver. Surprisingly, there were 3 return emails in his inbox. He started to open the first one, but decided he better resolve the current nuisance before he took on an additional activity. And that was assuming he got the current thing right. That night, Chris had his second bad dream, at least that he was aware of. Joyce had mentioned something after the Donnie thing, and Brigida brought it up as well, that he was agitated and yelling out. He had no memory of those, but this one was vivid. He was at a coastal resort in Mexico with Floyd, but Floyd was the Pocatello driver. There was a Mexican kid lifeguard who only had part of a leg because it had been bitten off by a shark. The lifeguard took them on a glass-bottom boat for a sightseeing tour. At the back of the boat, Bethany was up against the railing and Kyle was making love to her. Chris tried to break it up, but Kyle threw him overboard. Every time he tried to climb back onto the boat, Floyd beat his hands with a baseball bat. He couldn't sleep anymore after the dream, so he got up and luckily his favorite show, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, was on, and after a while, the dream didn't bother him as much. He supposed he was fortunate to not be having continuous nightmares like you'd hear about people in similar situations having to face, and he left it at that. It shaped into a sparkling clear April Saturday morning, the fog gone and the city already flooded with sunshine, and Chris decided to go to Stinson Beach. First, he stopped at a Big Five in Corte Madera and bought an ocean swimsuit, a one-piece vest and shorts job made of thin wetsuit material that supposedly left you enough flexibility to actually swim. He added some short fins and a pair of goggles, parked in Mill Valley, slung on his backpack, and picked up the start of the Dipsy Trail. It was his favorite hike, about 7 miles up and over Mount Tam to the coast, and it began with several hundred forested steps climbing out of Old Mill Park before opening up into bright daylight and the smell of the ocean mixed with licorice from the wild anisette that was all over the place. There were steep switchbacks down the backside of the trail with sweeping views of the coastline toward Point Reyes, and he was feeling it in his shins by the time he reached Highway 1 and the little town of Stinson Beach. He wolfed down a burger, fries, and a milkshake at the same outdoor place he'd gone to as a kid, and he watched the people roll in. The scene hadn't changed much. You had yuppies and families and giggling high school kids driving the twisty road from 101, stripping down and going home sunburned from a beach where you couldn't comfortably put a toe in the water until about July. But they all seemed to have fun, and the setting, it was world class. Chris gave it a half hour and then changed into the ocean suit, adjusted the fins and goggles, and went in. The initial temperature shock was just as brutal as without the fancy suit, but he warmed up pretty quickly, so the thing worked. There were scattered surfers out there, no one else swimming. He worked his way past the break line, floated around for a while, picked out a flag on the beach, swam parallel until he was in line with it, practiced going underwater a few times, and got the hell out. He hadn't been in any body of water for a while, but he felt reasonably good to go. The suit was bulky, but probably a good idea. The fins helped for sure. The goggles were debatable, because someone might put them around his own neck and strangle him. But having the good vision seemed worth it. The main thing, he was a good swimmer. He'd been on a year-round team when he was young, practicing 5 days a week at the USF pool and going to meets on weekends. By the time he was 14, he was burned out and quit the sport, but by then he'd at least put up a JO qualifying time in the 100 fly. He relaxed on the sand, leaning back on his elbows and taking in the spring collection of new bikini offerings. You really did see more female on a sunny day at the beach than anywhere else. Under better circumstances, it would be a great afternoon to alternate between dozing off and observing the action, but not today. He figured, why not thumb a ride like the old days? And if that didn't work, he'd have to take the bus back. But the second car that came by stopped. The guy was a bleach blonde-haired surfer, mid-30s, heading back to the city, driving in flip-flops. Chris asked how it went today. Well, you know Stinson, the surfer said. Short break. I live in the Sunset, so Ocean Beach is a lot better. But I come here for the change of pace. I know I love it here, Chris said. I could live here, at least during the week. I hear you, the guy said. Looks like you got wet yourself. Yeah, trying a little open water swimming. I got a suit. Feels strange, but you can move your arms and legs okay, I guess. That's the only way to go, the guy said. Otherwise, you stiffen up pretty quick. You planning on going in the water this week? Actually, I was thinking about it, yeah. Well, be careful. We got big surf on the way. We do? Late Tuesday, supposed to hit, the guy said. They're getting fired up at Mavericks. Some Hawaii guys are flying in. Interesting, Chris said. So when is high tide these days? Right now, around 5:30 in the morning. But with this thing, it'll be big all day. After high tide, though, typically, it goes out for the next 12 hours. It's not that cut and dry quite, the guy said, but yeah. Chris said, so if a guy was floating around on a board and just went with it, or had drowned or something, where would he end up? Starting from where? I don't know, say from where they surf under the bridge. They'd go somewhere outside the gate, I guess, probably a mile or two. Chris said, would they ever just keep going, or they'd get reversed back in eventually? Reversed back in, the guy said. Maybe not right away, though. A lot of factors out there. I see. Well, where's the best place to watch? Guys surfing big waves? Yeah. Great highway down past Sloat should be pretty strong. Earlier is always best, of course. Cleaner sets, no wind. You going to be out there then, Chris said? Nah, man, I don't think so. I grew up down south and surfed some big storms in the 90s, but I got a wife and kid now. They had reached downtown Mill Valley. Chris thanked the guy. No worries, the surfer said, and you'll have fun with the open water stuff. There are groups. You can go online. Chris said he appreciated it. A hot Starbucks sounded good right now, but before he went in, he called Bethany. You caught me at home, she said. I'm just unpacking some things from the farmer's market. I'm off to a hair appointment in a minute. What for? Your hair's fine. Okay, I'm not getting into this. I try to stay presentable if you don't mind. So, any earth-shattering news? Work? Billy? Your apartment? Kyle? Squash? Anything? Chris was counting backwards with his fingers, putting it at 6 days ago that he used the rock on Kyle. Nope. Other than Dr. Steiner wants you to come in, of course. I've given up on that one. Tell him current patient condition inconclusive. Seriously, you're okay, Chris? Fair. The anticipation has me a little stressed. Physically, I still do what I have to do. One good thing, you eat whatever you want, no conscience. You can unequivocally tell the American Heart Association to shove it. Fine, but I wouldn't be simply throwing caution to the wind. How about dinner tonight? A drink? Something? I can't. Okay, tomorrow for a little Sunday brunch then. Don't have my schedule in front of me, but I can probably make time. I'm actually busy tomorrow morning as well, she said. Tomorrow night, Chris said? Nope. Monday, though, we have a league match at the Bay Club. You could stop by and watch some if you can tolerate us. Then we could grab something afterward. You wear normal workout gear when you play? Or a uniform or what? Chris, it starts at 8 if you'd like to come. Please enjoy the rest of your weekend. Chris ordered a small decaf and a finger sandwich at Starbucks, and halfway home, the hike and the swim and the sun hit him all at once, and he went straight to bed, no dreams to contend with this time.